is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Gina McAndrews. Hello, Gina.
Hello there, Susan. It's great to be back on Local Talk. It's been a while since we made our road trip out and about finding new stories.
Yes, this week we'll be reporting on the road trip you made out. Where did you go?
Over to the mill in Iowa City to represent SILT, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust.
Well, then we'll hear about that a little bit later. That's an organization I knew nothing about before you said you were going on this trip. So I'll look forward to hearing more after we hear from Leanne Harter, who's here with us, with her monthly Story County Report. Hello, Leanne.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming over from Nevada.
You are more than welcome. I'm glad the roads are open and it's almost springtime is here, we can say. I'm going to start out by sharing some proclamations that the Story County Board of Supervisors have acted on the past couple weeks. It's been kind of exciting meetings the past couple weeks. On April 2nd, Ann Owens from the Volunteer Center attended the board meeting and proclaimed April 5th through the 21st, so next week, as National Volunteer Week. So if you know someone that volunteers their time and talents, make sure you thank them during National Volunteer Week. That same meeting, the board continued their annual proclamation where they recognize April as National County Government Month. National County Government Month is an annual recognition of county government and the many, many services counties provide. The 2019 theme is called Connecting the Unconnected, and it focuses on how counties deliver people-centered services to create healthy, safe, and vibrant communities. National County Government Month is sponsored by the National Association of Counties, or NACO, and it's to help raise public awareness and understanding about the unique roles and responsibilities of the 3,069 counties throughout the United States. There's a couple of really fun resources that NACO has put together. It's called My County Works, and it's an activity book for children, but it's also a full curriculum for teachers and educators for students grades 6th through 9th grade about the role and functions of county government. There's an online game called Counties Work, and both of them can be found on NACO's website at www.naco.org. And actually, Counties Work is pretty fun, even if you're in county government. Yesterday, at the board meeting, they acted on a proclamation from the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, proclaiming Saturday, April 13th, as Bev Crumple Making Democracy Work Day for actions quietly volunteering for several decades through nonprofit organizations, civic involvement, public service, and advocacy for voting rights, especially for disenfranchised and forgotten individuals. This includes steps to register well over 1,000 new voters, assist women to become more involved in democracy through Women at the Well, and for 9 years serve as an appointed member of the Story County Compensation Board. So definitely thank Bev, and if you happen to see my husband that same day, tell him happy birthday. I had to throw that in. The Treasurer's Office has started their monthly training and development with some revised hours. Every month throughout the year of year of 2019, the Treasurer's Office will have revised hours the second Tuesday of the month. They'll not open to the public until 9:30 a.m. They'll use that 90 minutes from 8 to 9:30 for training and staff development. The office remains open to the public every other day from 8 to 5 p.m. Those dates and times are all posted on the county's website, and we try to get a reminder out monthly. Switching gears to conservation, Hickory Grove Park is closed now through sometime in the spring of 2020. The lake drawdown is continuing. The improvements are starting to really take place at Hickory Grove. So effective immediately, the interior portion of that park and the east game area is closed due to the lake restoration. This does include the beach and swimming area, the concessions and open shelter houses on the north side of the lake, Oriole Ridge Lodge, and all trails. Park visitors must obey signage and barricades during the active construction period, and it is an active construction zone. Camping is allowed at both Breezy Bay, which is the main campground, as well as the primitive campground, beginning Thursday, May 23rd through Tuesday, September 3rd. Campers are restricted to that immediate area surrounding the campground, campground areas. Snow Bunting Lodge is available to rent from those same dates, May 23rd to Tuesday, September 3rd. But again, activities are limited to around that. Registration for Story County spring and summer activities and camps begins Saturday, April 13th, again, at 8 a.m. Go to our website. Those fill up really fast. So watch if you're interested for yourself or a child, 8 a.m. start. And then dust control time. We had a fun yesterday, a meeting at the board meeting yesterday. County Engineer Darren Moon shared his quarterly report with the board. He discussed all the flooding events, the blizzard events, the road conditions, and then he made an excellent transition, said he's never been so happy in his life as a professional engineer to see dust. And it's true. As wet as the roads have been, there are some areas of dust. Just a reminder, if you do live in unincorporated areas and you want to do dust control, a permit is required. You go to the Story County website at storycountyiowa.gov, go to government offices and departments, engineer secondary roads, and there's a dust control tab. And so those are due no later than April 19th.
I have a question about what's dust, because when I first came to Iowa, when I had my windows open, there would be a thin layer of black dust all over everything. Now, I haven't seen that for years, but I now am aware that with no-till that we're not getting so much topsoil blown off. Now, is that the kind of dust you're talking about?
No, it's the dust that comes from the county road, secondary road system, that type of dust. And a lot of our roads are now the limestone from the Martin Marietta lime rather than gravel, because gravel is a very limited resource in Story County. So it's that white particulate that really does seem to add up when your windows are open. So in some cases, dust control for allergies, for asthma, whatever is definitely needed beyond just the aesthetics of keeping things clean in your house. That's a great question, though, too. Last, we do want to hear from you. Story County Board of Supervisors annually adopts a communications plan. That's out strategies that county staff, mainly me and others that work with me, use to share what's happening within Story County government and getting the message out, getting people to understand what we're doing. That includes this monthly appearance. We also promote our web pages, use social media, starting to do that quite extensively, have weekly YouTube videos of the board meeting. You can go in and watch that. Like usually Thursday, they're posted. We have a quarterly publication called Our Story and a lot of different strategies. We want to know what's on your mind. How do we get the information you want out there, and what venue do we use? So we thank you for sharing your thoughts. Anything is great to hear. You can reach me at lharter at Story County, Iowa. So that's LHARTER at storycountyiowa.gov. You can call me at 515-382-7247 or check our website and sign up for Notify Me. That lets you know, lets you get notified when meetings are happening and all that kind of good stuff. Our website, again, is www.storycountyiowa.gov.
Thank you so much, Leanne.
You are more than welcome. Thank you for letting me come every month.
Well, you always have something surprising to tell us.
I always have something. That's true.
Okay. In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard from Leanne Harter with her monthly Story County report. Gina McAndrews and I, Susan Franzen, are your hosts for today. Gina's road trip this week was inspired by a program a couple of weeks ago on biofuels and the challenge from Mighty Earth that Iowa land should be used for food, not fuel. In the meantime, I heard a presentation from Jerry Hatfield, director of USDA's Midwest Climate Hub, challenging some of our conventional ideas about Iowa agriculture. And last week, we heard from climate activist John Davis, who was forced to move from his home in Hamburg, Iowa, when his house was destroyed in the recent flooding. Kind of ironic. He'd just come back from the Philippines to talk about their climate situation, and there his house was waiting for him. So I'm very eager to hear what you have to tell us about silt. Tell us about your road trip, Gina.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, SILT stands for the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. And there was a group of people that was inspired to start protecting Iowa land for food production. And Susan Arum is one of our leaders, and she is kind of heading that up right now. There's a whole board of us, and I'm lucky enough to be on the board. But the main idea behind SILT is to help protect land for growing food in Iowa. And it provides one way for families to preserve their farmland and help transition it into an opportunity for young farmers to get into agriculture and produce food. And so Greg Brown and Dave Moore were kind enough to hold a concert for us last week at the Mill. And we had a full house, and it was kind of a fundraiser, and it went really well.
The Mill in Iowa City?
Yes, the Mill in Iowa City. So okay. I had a little road trip without you.
Yeah, you certainly did. But it sounds like a really good one.
Oh, it was great. And the food was great. The people were great. And we ended up raising over $10,000.
Oh, wow. Well, you gave me the your recordings, because on a road trip, a good road trip, you always have recordings. And so I made a little collage of those, starting out with Greg Brown. So let's hear that now.
You're listening to KHOY in Ames, Iowa. And this is Greg Brown, and I'm speaking out for SILT, which I hope is going to grow and do beautiful things in our state of Iowa. Thank you.
Okay, why did you get involved with SILT?
Well, Susan Arum asked us to attend the big retreat that helped found SILT, and we really hadn't heard about this way of solving some of the problems that were in Iowa relating to agriculture. And we learned a lot from Susan.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your farm?
Well, it's a diverse farm with somewhere around 75 different species of fruit and or nut producing trees, shrubs, and vines. And we've had livestock in the past. We're adding sheep this year. The most important crop is chestnuts by a wide margin, but other really important crops include pawpaw, persimmon, heartnut, Asian pear, and hopefully soon, honeyberry.
It's a farm that uses trees and other perennials to produce nuts and fruits that we can sell. So the trees get to keep living and providing constant cover on the ground. And under the trees, we have other bushes that produce crops and everything. The ground is always covered, and we have a constant income now from the trees. And it's a good, sustainable agricultural system.
Yeah. And where do you market all of your products?
We're doing almost everything with U-Pick. We have customers who come to our farm who want to harvest their own persimmons, pawpaws, Asian pears, chestnuts.
Yeah, and we've had customers come from as far away as 1,200 miles one way.
Wow.
To make chestnuts.
But most of them drive about 2.5 hours to come to our farm.
Well, that's still a big distance. And what do you plan to do with the future of your farm? Can you tell us a little bit about SILT and how that is involved in that?
Well, with SILT, we can guarantee that whoever takes over our farm is going to be farming in a sustainable manner. We're okay with taking out a few trees, but what we want to see is a farming system using perennials that's going to keep producing food and making an income.
And will not permit soil erosion.
And why is that important to you?
It goes back to, I think, our wildlife biology training, that we feel it's really important to work with nature, to work with perennials, that you're using the things that nature already has available to produce food in a sustainable manner. I mean, even the trees we picked out, you don't need a lot of spraying for them. You don't need chemical fertilizers.
And we want it to be there in the future for people who come after us, in perpetuity, in fact.
And what would you say to people who are thinking about maybe donating or getting an easement for their farm with silt?
Go ahead and start talking to the silt staff, because they are patient people. We've been talking to them and slowly getting this process done for over 3 years.
And what would be some of the benefits to farmers for, you know, getting an easement or a life estate, that sort of thing?
Potential tax benefit for putting a conservation easement on the land. But that's not what's important to us. What's important to us is protecting the land from damage in perpetuity.
If you have ground that you have struggled hard to have it terrace, to make sure you've got cover crops, to farm it in a good way, then silt can make sure that the people who get the land after you will follow similar practices. They can make sure that good farming practices are on the land.
Well, I shall, I shall not be moved. I shall not be moved like a tree planted by I shall not be moved.
So how'd you hear about silt?
I heard about silt when searching for land trust. I moved back to Iowa City and was searching for land trust and specifically groups that advocated for young adult farmers in the Iowa City area. So just from simply Google searching and looking around, I found out about silt. And I wanted to volunteer and saw that you had a board vacancy, so I asked if I could maybe interview to fill that.
What inspired you to even Google for land trust?
I have a background in farming. I was working on a farm in Oregon and moved back to Iowa City. While in Oregon, I got hooked up with a group called the National Coalition for Young Adult Farmers, and I was on an organic permaculture and livestock farm in Oregon. So I wanted to find a chapter of the young adult farmers in the Iowa City area, and I found SILT, and I read their mission statement, and that was even more attractive to me, so that's how I found you guys.
What do you think SILT is doing that's important for Iowa?
For me, Iowa being a state that majority of their land focuses on monocrop and commercial agriculture, SILT's doing two great things. One, promoting the land that is advocating for diverse or biodiverse farming practices, and also is saving the land from development and, you know, being sold for real estate.
What's your plans on the board of SILT?
My plan on the board for SILT is to try and get as many people like me and maybe in my age group involved with SILT.
Well, I shall. I shall not be moved. I shall not be moved like a tree planted by water. I shall not be moved.
Okay, so I'm here with new farmers in the SILT program.
Yeah, my name's Carolyn Scherf.
And I'm William Cressy.
And we've been farming together for about a year now at this SILT property in Johnson County. And this year we're looking forward to expanding our operation. We'll be expanding our CSA to include 10 CSA shareholders. And we're looking forward to transitioning to a no-till vegetable operation. So we had the NRCS out this week. They're going to help us lay out some new contour lines and... Yeah, we're just really excited to provide food for the local community. We're really excited because our farm is a worker-owned cooperative, which is a little different than a lot of farmers are doing around here. A lot of farmers will hire out workers, but for us, our workers are our owners. So we really honor labor, and we really honor working collaboratively and operating not as a hierarchy, but as a team. And we're really honored to have Silt as a part of our team. We really value interdependence and working with our community. So we're really excited to invite shareholders to a part of our CSA and getting food out to the people.
And how did you even first hear about Silt?
Well, I've known Susan for a long time when she first got involved with this farm in Morse in Iowa City. It's really been kind of a joy for me to see Silt grow from a seed of an idea to what it is now. And now there's, what, 6 or 9 farmers involved in Silt?
Yes, there's over 700 acres.
Over 700 acres are now protected by Silt for food production in perpetuity, and it's so important because each day we're losing land to development, each day we're losing land to erosion, and to be sure that there's going to be land left for beginning farmers around cities where people are going to need that food is so important.
So how did you get interested in food production and agriculture and farming? Did you come from that background?
I did not, actually. This is my first time farming. I started out really small with talking to Carolyn, and she had this farm that she was just getting started working on, and I just went out to help her out one day. I had fun and kept going back and talking about agriculture and, dreaming about the potential future of this farm. And, here I am now, almost a year later. Just about to kick things off for the season.
Yeah.
Where do you guys want to be, say, 3 or 4 or 5 years from now?
We'd like to be caring for our vegetables and working this no-till style agriculture, really building the soil, really bringing in a lot of organic matter, bringing in a lot of compost. We'd also like to take care of the perennial systems and see some of these chestnut trees grow into fruition. There's also a lot of elderberries and honeyberries and really a lot of potential out of this farm. It just needs a little love. So we're glad to be bringing some of that love to the table.
Why do you think Silt is important for future generations? I mean, you guys are in your 20s and really kind of changing the face of agriculture.
It's not easy to find farmland these days. And a lot of farmers that are looking to get into the game, there's a lot of barriers. There's the barrier of education. There's a barrier of having enough access to capital. And so having that access to land is really essential. It's really the, kind of the baseline for what you need to get started in agriculture.
Now, how are you each, so there's 5 of you involved in this, how are you each deciding your specific roles in the farm?
So we got together at the beginning and started talking about, you know, like Carolyn mentioned, we've got these trees, chestnut trees and fruit trees. We've got our vegetables and we've got a whole bunch of, you know, work around the farm, a little bit of construction and, you know, all kinds of stuff to do. So we got together at the beginning and just laid out our tasks and, you know, we're all in agreement as to what those are, and then sort of broke it up based on who's the most interested, who has the most experience, and who's just kind of free when to do what. And, you know, since we all have our own kind of personal pet projects and stuff, it wasn't hard to do. It was just kind of a matter of, you know, coordinating all of that activity.
So are all 5 of you going to work full-time at the farm, or are you working part-time to help sustain the until you really get rocking and rolling?
Yeah, for us right now, we're all working full-time jobs, and luckily for us, we all have different schedules, so we're able to make it to the farm daily to take care of what needs to be done. A lot of our work is done on the weekends. You know, we're hustling pretty hard to get all the work done. Yeah.
And so what's the name of your new farm?
Yeah, our farm is called Chestnut Hill Cooperative Farm. We named it Chestnut Hill Cooperative Farm after the there's a big hill of chestnut trees. And, getting involved with the vegetables, getting involved in all the other perennial systems.
And so in a couple of years, how many CSA members do you think you want us to have?
That's, I mean, hard to say. At this point, it's just kind of a matter of trying to identify, you know, the parts of the market that haven't really been tapped into yet. We don't want to step on anybody's toes. We don't want to, you know, advertise our CSA to people who are happy with their CSAs. So it's kind of just looking at, you know, where is that demand? And then in a few years, if we do things right, those chestnut trees and those fruit trees might be popping. So we could also be looking at wholesale or, you know, trying to find
chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of movement happening here in Iowa City right now around aggregating different farmers' produce to reach wholesale markets like schools and other institutions. There's a new food hub in town that's getting off the ground, and they have some awesome neighborhood stands that they provide produce to. So last year we got to dip our toes in the water of providing food to those neighborhood food stands, and we'd like to continue with those kinds of creative markets who are also trying to reach low-income eaters and make sure that our food goes, you know, equity is a big priority of ours, so we'd really like to make sure that our food goes to all people of all incomes.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Gina McAndrews and I are your hosts for today, and she brought back some reflections and interviews from the farmers who are raising diverse foods with the help of land they are farming through the Land Trust of Silts. Gina, you have somebody else for us to talk to.
Yes, we were lucky enough to be able to reach Stuart Valentine with us down in southeastern Iowa. He's our fearless leader of the board of directors for Silt, and I believe he's going to join us online.
On the phone.
You should be.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Gina. Good day. This is Stuart.
Good morning, Stuart. How are you today?
Wonderful spring day in Iowa, at least down in the southeast part.
No snow yet.
No, I think we're going to dodge that one. Thank you.
That's good. Hey, would you mind telling us a little bit about Silt and your role and why you decided to join us on Silt?
Well, you know, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, when I heard the name Silt, it just landed with me. Everything I've learned over the years about farming practices and industrial agriculture and the challenges we face with respect to water quality and loss of topsoil and the degradation of soil health and vitality led me to believe that this was an idea whose time had come. We have, 150-odd years of history of agriculture in this part of the Midwest, and if we have a long-term view of our civilization, of our time on this planet, we must figure out a way to feed ourselves in a way that maintains a more, I would say, biologically diverse and healthy soil system for our land. And the way that agriculture is unfolding and has unfolded in the last 50 years tells me that we just have an incomplete design framework, if you will. We need to come back and rethink together how we want to do agriculture to produce food that actually maintains and restores soil health.
So can you expand a little on how Silt addresses some of those issues?
Well, it does it in two ways. One is we look hard at the ownership system that we have in place, because as the previous speakers from Chestnut Hill Cooperative talked about, right now land access is really challenging for new farmers. And so Silt is able to provide an alternative for existing landholders to consider putting their farm under easement or actually donating that farm to the trust, knowing that that land is going to be in service of clean food production, food that people eat, for years to come. So it's a tuning of the dial in terms of providing more alternatives to new farmers coming into the market. Silt also has very high standards about how we want to farm that ground in a way that restores biological health to the soil and develops a more diverse organic agricultural system.
So could you expand a little? If somebody had, you know, 50 or 100 or 500 acres, how would they get one of these easements or do a donation?
Well, you'd go to the SILT website, which is silt.org, and you would put in a request for contact from our wonderful Joe Klingelhutz, who is our landman who comes out to work with farm owners to do an assessment about what the optimal use of that piece of land is and how SILT might be able to work with the landowner. The process of putting an easement on a land is somewhat complex. There's various steps you have to go through with respect to the legalities of it. But what the farm owner then knows is that that land will be used for farming purposes for the long haul and not be put under, development or made for other uses. So it's a way that you can maintain the legacy and tradition of that piece of ground for producing high-quality food.
And then once somebody donates or has an easement on their land, what's the process from there? How do they match it up with young farmers?
Well, likewise, on the SILT website, we have a section there for new farmers or any farmers, for that matter, who wish to come onto a SILT property or farm an existing piece of property with an easement on it. We have a farm selection committee that works with applicants just to get to know you. You get to know us. We basically have a period of show and tell, if you will, where new farmers are able to evaluate what lands are available for farming, and we essentially play the role of a matchmaker, trying to find the best person to farm that particular piece of ground, given that their skills and what that piece of land is optimally suited for.
Thank you. Any more questions, Gina?
And what benefit would it have for landowners to give that land to SILT? Potentially.
Well, there is in the tax code, and I'm not a CPA, and all of this has to be reviewed with by your tax professional. But there are considerable tax benefits that can come with donating a piece of land to SILT or putting an easement on an existing piece of land that restricts its use for clean food production. So many of the families that have participated in donating lands or putting an easement on their properties have benefited through the tax aspects of this. So not only are you getting the benefit of knowing that that property is going to be properly stewarded for literally decades to come, even centuries to come, you also get some near-term tax benefits.
Okay, that's terrific. And if somebody might not have some land but might want to be involved, such as get on the board of directors or something like that, how would one person do that?
Well, this is a statewide organization, and we need people from all over the state who are interested in potentially volunteering for SILT events. We have showcase days. We have the Foodie Fest that we are looking to launch. Many of you might, of the listeners, might have been at the Foodie Fest in Des Moines last September. So the website is our portal into the world of Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. So please come on to silt.org and find out how you can become involved.
And one other thing, if people wanted to help donate to the cause financially, is there a way to do that?
Yes, there is. And again, our good old website has a place for donation, because these long-term commitments that we make to landowners through easements, or if we choose to accept a farm under donation, there's ongoing expenses for legal considerations and taxation, all that stuff. Silt needs the support of everybody in this state who cares about land stewardship and preserving farmland for clean food production. So please do go to silt.org and consider a donation.
Well, thank you, Stuart. That is a very impressive organization, and I appreciate your coming on to KHOI today. And so thank you.
Yes, very good. Enjoy the day. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you very much, Stuart. Take care.
Bye-bye.
This is KHOY Community Radio, and you've been listening to Stuart Valentine, the president of SILT, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, talking about transitioning land for growing food. But I couldn't help thinking, when I was listening to the various interviews, that you're talking about just 700 acres now. That's a pretty small fraction of Iowa farmland. And so I thought it would be good to talk to another organization someone being the executive director of the Practical Farmers of Iowa, Sally Worley, who's here with us today, to tell us what the situation is from your perspective. And what is Practical Farmers of Iowa, for those who don't know?
Well, I do want to remind everybody first, excuse me, that SILT is pretty young, so 700 acres is pretty impressive for its first few years, I think. Although it is just a tidbit of land in Iowa, it's a really good start toward helping create more food here. But thanks for having me on this morning. Practical Farmers of Iowa's mission is to equip farmers to build resilient farms and communities. And we do that primarily through farmer-to-farmer education and on-farm research and farmer network building. So we're really helping farmers build support networks that both help them learn how to farm more resiliently in Iowa, as well as get the support needed. Oftentimes, trying to forge a different path here in Iowa can feel a little bit lonely. So they found they can go to their fellow members to get some support and a sympathetic ear.
You also have to deal with this issue of transitioning, and I think you have made some real major efforts in that department, right?
That's correct. As you said, we serve everybody in Iowa. So we have farmers who are growing fruits and vegetables, raising livestock, growing commodity crops. So we have everybody within our network. And one thing that we're doing is we have a quite robust beginning farmer program. So you heard Carolyn earlier. She's part of our savings incentive program, and we have quite a few other offerings to beginning farmers because there is a lot of interest in Iowa to start farming. However, there are a lot of barriers. But this is a very urgent need to train beginning farmers because of our aging farmer population. So we are also helping farmers transitioning out think about what they want to do with the future of their farm land and farm business.
Just what kind of numbers are you talking about, or proportion of the farm population?
Well, 60% of our farmland is owned by people who are 65 or older, and 35% is owned by people 75 or older. So the clock is ticking on a lot of that farmland. It's going to transfer whether people intentionally plan for that transfer or not. So we are really hoping to start the conversation, destigmatize the inability to talk about farm transfer. It's been kind of a taboo topic in Iowa, too often people find out what their parents did with the farm after their parents pass away. So we are really trying to get the conversation started, have people think about what they even want that future farm transfer to look like, and then communicate that to their heirs or others if they don't have heirs.
I would think that there would be a big issue with using the sale of the farm for retirement or for as the heirs. They look forward to this, $12,000 an acre on some of this farmland. And so that would tend to rise to the top for a lot of people.
It does initially, you know, because they think that's what they automatically think about is retirement or the cost of that farmland. However, if they think of through their needs, and there are a lot of people who can help them do this, think about what their retirement plan is, what their need is. There are a lot of ways to structure a farm transfer to both help the generation transitioning out be able to retire and afford that, and help the generation transition and think about what they want to do more than just potentially getting the top dollar. And a lot of farmers and farmland owners do need income from their farm, but there are a lot of opportunities to still generate that income in ways that help nurture their values for that farmland.
So what kind of mechanisms you have for that?
Well, there are many, from life insurance to charitable remainder trusts to reserve life estates and all these tax things that, like Stuart, I can mention but not explain in detail. SILT is a good opportunity. There are so many tax incentives out there. There's things like the Transition Incentive Program, too, that help ease the tax burden for people. And also just thinking through things like, what is my goal? I want it to stay in the family. I want it to support conservation. I want it to support food farming, things like that. They can, if they identify what their primary goals are, they can forge a path forward that helps achieve those goals while achieving their financial needs as well. It's not always just putting it up for auction or selling it to the largest farm in the county, but that takes some intentional thought and communication both with estate planners, tax experts, and their family.
Since we have you here for Practical Farmers of Iowa, and I think that we have at least one of the hosts who knows quite a bit about farming, right, Gina?
Oh, a little bit.
Why don't you tell a little bit about your background so we know why I say that you know a little bit about farming?
Well, I grew up on a farm in eastern Iowa over in Dubuque, and I was the oldest child, and so I loved the outdoors, so I always went with my dad, and we had pretty diverse corn and hay and cattle, sheep, pigs, horses.
Oh, so they were grazing on the land?
Yes. Yeah, we had cow-calf operation, and I was riding a horse at two and driving about 6 or 7 years old, and been falling off my horse ever since. And anyway, I really developed a love for agriculture and the land and just being outdoors and the birds and nature. And I went on to pursue my degree in animal science. Was interested in veterinary school, but then came across organic chemistry, and that kind of put a slower damper on that. And then worked in agriculture. I worked in D.C. With the Senate for several years on ag policy, and then traveled abroad for a couple years working in agriculture, and came back to Iowa and studied ecology and agronomy and taught at Iowa State for a number of years, and have just always been involved in, you know, the food system, and I'm very good at eating, and I like to eat good food. And I've always been impressed with the Practical Farmers of Iowa. It started way back in 1985.
However, Dick Thompson, one of our co-founders, was doing his on-farm research into the 70s.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yes.
And so I got introduced with that when I was at Iowa State, and just always loved that organization, and really think they're doing a lot of great programs, especially with our big issues now with getting young people into, you know, being able to farm. Can you tell us more about your program of matching farmers, young farmers with older farmers and farms?
Sure. The way farming has gone in Iowa, farms have gotten larger. However, farmers are not typically able to bring back a next generation, not as easily as they had been on a diverse farm like Gina's growing up. So we are helping farmers, A, diversify, adding some specialty crops or other things to be able to bring back that next generation. But we also have a website that we call Find a Farmer, where aspiring farmers looking for land can go search, and then landowners seeking somebody to farm with them, either in a lease arrangement or to eventually sell to, can put information, and then we hope that they can find each other and start the conversation. And we do realize that this is a delicate relationship, so this is merely a contact point to start the conversation, but it has been able to provide quite a few connections for people to hopefully find somebody to farm their land. As we have less and less farmers here in Iowa, a lot of farmers are in the situation where they have children, but they don't plan on coming back to the farm. So then even if you have heirs who love farming, they might not be in the situation where they want to come back. So this is helping those farmers find somebody to carry on their legacy.
And then once those young farmers are getting involved, or for the older farmers that are interested in trying some new ideas besides the commodity crops that traditionally have been grown in Iowa, I mean, Practical Farmers of Iowa provides a wealth of knowledge and also opportunities for farmers to learn from each other. Can you tell a little bit about, like, the field days? And
absolutely. We do a lot of events. We have about 150 a year that we hold ourselves, and then we participate in partner events as well, over 100 usually. They are all farmer-led, and they are all based on what our farmers want to learn. So we take great care to listen to our farmers, and whatever they want to learn about, we find another farmer experienced in that, and they very candidly share their experiences, the good and the bad, to help others learn. And it's amazing to see their generosity in sharing numbers, failures, things that aren't necessarily always shared in the farmscape. We've created this really safe kind of haven where they feel like they can talk to each other. And that's very successfully created this culture of curiosity as well, where they're continually looking at their practices and seeing how they can improve them. So even our farmers who are in their 70s are making drastic changes to their farm. And that's really refreshing and encouraging to see.
Yes, because I've seen some field days where everything from aronia berries and chestnuts to rotational livestock grazing to
cover crops, herbs, medicinal herbs. I mean, it's all over the gamut, and it's really based on what people are interested in learning about. Field day season is upon us. We just had most of our spring field days, and today is our deadline to get all the details for our summer field days in, and that guide will come out mid-May, and we'll have field days all over the state. We were started on, Gina was talking about the mid-70s when Dick Thompson was doing research. We do a lot of on-farm research that is all based on what our farmers want to learn, and then we help them create research projects that are have data integrity to help them answer those questions with data. We do welcome everybody, so we have farmers with thousands of acres to farmers with a quarter acre. And so we do also try to help cultivate this culture where farmers talk about their experiences rather than talk about all farmers should do this or that, so that people are learning from each other's experiences rather than their overarching philosophies. And that's been a really effective way to get farmers of all stripes together to be able to have constructive conversations and find out that they have more in common than some somewhat divisive nature of our times may like to illustrate.
Because we all want clean air and clean water.
We do, absolutely.
And we can always keep improving that. And you also have like a big conference, don't you, in February?
We do in January. Yes. This year it was in the middle of a blizzard, which is always fun. But that's what happens when you have conferences in Iowa. And that is a wonderful event with 50-some workshops and farmers from Iowa and beyond coming together. And sometimes people joke it's pickup trucks and Priuses in the parking lot, because it is such a neat, diverse audience that we bring together to learn and to also feel that support, which is is huge.
I have a question about the diverse audience, because when you said farms as small as a quarter acre, I realized that if you have a house in the outside the city limits, you have to have at least an acre, I guess because of sewage, you have to have your own cesspool. And so you have a lot of backyards that could be little farms. Isn't that right?
That is right. And if you look at our network, about 75%, 74% are either farming or aspiring to farm within the next 3 years. We also have people who are just interested in farming either through backyard gardening or because they realize that farming is so important to our rural communities, our air quality, our water quality here in Iowa. But we have farmers who live in the city limits, and they are farming on very, very small plots, but making an income to help support their livelihoods.
That's very interesting that you can do that in a backyard.
Well, yeah. Iowa has some of the best soil in the world, and so
it's quite productive.
If we keep preserving it, we might still keep it.
Yeah, and that's, of course, that's what silt is about, and that's what I guess a lot of the practices that Practical Farmers is working on is preserving the soil, improving the soil.
Like I said, we listen to our farmers a lot, and we know their priorities, their top priorities are tied at soil health and helping beginning farmers. So that really provides us direction in what we focus on. So a lot of our work is focused on soil and beginning farmers.
Wow. And another thing that I know, the transition of farms that Silt's been working with as well as Practical Farmers of Iowa is the Ag Arts with Map Our Kingdom.
Yes. So we commissioned Map of My Kingdom in, I think it was 2014. And the goal is to get people thinking about all the options out there to see how dicey it can be if you don't set those goals and have the communication. And actually, we're going to have a performance in Okoboji on Thursday with a farm transfer workshop on Friday, and then another performance in Waterloo on Saturday of Map My Kingdom. So there are opportunities this week to come watch a performance.
Well, thank you so much. We've just been talking with Sally Worley, the Executive Director of Practical Farmers of Iowa, about the transition of farmland following the conversations with people in Silt, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. And before we go into our outro, I'd like to point up some events that are other events are coming up this weekend. In Ames, we're going to have Ames Reads Leopold, which has been an annual event. But this year, it is put on by members of the Sustainable Agriculture Student Association, who will be doing the readings from Aldo Leopold's Sand County Almanac, celebrating the 70th anniversary of its publication. The book introduces Leopold's most influential idea, the land ethic. And it is in a book that lends itself to being read aloud. So they invite you to join them on Sunday, April 14th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Ames Public Library Auditorium. And also this weekend, I'd like to remind you that The Ledges, a film prepared by Friends of Ledges in Boone, will be having filmings of that documentary in the Boone Theater, 11 a.m. on the 13th, on the 14th at 5 and 7 p.m. Sunday, and on the 15th at 7 p.m. So there are lots of things to do this weekend. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Gina McAndrews and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Greg Brown, Stuart Valentine, Sally Worley, and the various farmers involved in Silt.
You can listen to today's Local Talk radio show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered today by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website at khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.